The scripture reading is from James 4, 13 through 16. Now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business, and make money. Why, you not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil.
Morning. Our question for this morning comes from Mark chapter 8. Mark chapter 8, beginning in verse 34. Of course, this is another one of the questions that Jesus asked as we consider our consideration of those questions. When Jesus asked questions, they weren't just for information. He knew what was in the heart of man. As Peter says, when Jesus questioned him, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love you. The questions Jesus asked, not for information then, but they are to provoke thought, examination, self-examination on our behalf. Some of them are more familiar, some of them not perhaps so familiar. In Mark chapter 8, though, we have a familiar question. Mark chapter 8, verse 34. And he summoned the crowd with his disciples, and he said to them, if anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? For what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will also be ashamed of him when he comes in the glory of his Father with his holy angels. Of course, we briefly considered this question on last Sunday evening, but as I promised you at that time, and the Lord blessed us to be together again this morning to give more full consideration to this question this morning. I want you to think, what is the intent of Jesus when he asked this question? Is he saying, how much are you willing to give for your soul? It seems in the context that's a suggestion. He's asking them, are you willing to carry a cross in order to preserve your soul? In fact, in this context, we recognize too that Jesus is saying to him, have you considered that I am willing to carry a cross because I consider your soul so valuable? Are you not willing then to carry a cross, to give up your whole life, to give up everything else in order to preserve your soul? Is that the intent of the question? Or maybe the intent of the question is the other way. How little will some people sell their souls for? Is there perhaps a hint of sadness in Jesus' voice as he says, what does it profit a man if he gain the whole world and lose his soul? And yet, what a man will exchange for his soul? Does he recognize as he looks into the future that there will be those people who will sell their soul for such sad price as sordid affairs and temporary pleasures and a small pile of silver and gold or maybe some shabby house? They will consider those things of more value than their eternal soul. Either way the question is considered, it really implies this fundamental fact. Do we really understand the value of the soul? Do we know what is important and what is not important in life? Just had my students do an exercise in one of my classes in which they are to rank order the roles that they have in life according to importance, according to how difficult they are to fulfill, and how much time they spend on them. And of course, one of the things they find, that would be true for all of us, is that we spend more time on things that are less important. Of course, I always warn them, I say, do not make Christian one of your roles. Because if you make Christian just one of your roles, you have already distorted the whole concept of what it means to be a Christian, and you've distorted the whole project. Because to be a Christian ought to be a part of every single role that you occupy. And to try and set aside and say, I'm going to spend 51% on being a Christian, the other 49% I get to spend as I see fit, is a misunderstanding of what it means to be a Christian. Jesus says, you know, are you willing to carry a cross or willing to lose your life for my sake? It implies in some ways that everything that you do has to be focused on the salvation of your soul. Do we understand really how valuable our souls are? Do we really understand what the value of the soul is and what we should give in exchange for it? Some have suggested in this passage we find that Jesus is talking about the marketplace, that we're talking about, do you know which stocks to bonds to buy? Do you know which paintings to buy? Something much more important than that. There are a lot of people who are financial wizards who probably don't understand what is really valuable in this life. And there are people, of course, who understand what's really valuable in this life who are never probably going to make a fortune because maybe they don't even care about it, but probably because they spend their time, their effort, they focus their attention on other things. Do we really know what's valuable when we look around the world? A lot of things that people treat as junk are really pretty valuable just because they don't understand that. Use Lego blocks. How many of those have you thrown out, perhaps, over the years? But some of them are worth quite a bit. A red Darth Vader helmet is worth $400. A red Darth Vader helmet, $400. I wouldn't even have known that. I've probably got some in my drawers at home somewhere. We should go checking through to find out about that. A particular antenna off of the Star Wars set is worth much more than you would ever imagine. Probably the kind of thing that you have buried in your backyard if you ever had a 10-year-old out there playing with their Legos. Instruction booklets without any of the Lego blocks at all go for as much as $275. You got any of those instruction books stored back in a drawer somewhere, you should go through those. Happy Meals. Happy Meal collections sell for $500. And if you have one of the rare gold-plated, what is this guy? Pikachu? I got no idea. Those things are really valuable, apparently. Do we understand what is valuable in life? I told you the other night about the man who bought the $4 picture frame, and it was a copy of the Declaration of Independence. And lo and behold, it turned out to be worth $2 million. Those are things in which we say, man, if I just knew the value. I guess that's why people like, I've never seen it, but I hear people talking to me about pickers. Not music pickers, but pawn shop pickers. What's really valuable in life? The Bible has better examples of that, of course, in Matthew chapter 13, where Jesus is listing a whole bunch of parables about the kingdom of heaven. Matthew chapter 13 and verse 44, he says, the kingdom of heaven is like a treasure hidden in a field. And when a man found in that treasure, he hid it again. And from joy, he goes and sells everything he has and buys that field. Or again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant seeking fine pearls. And upon finding one pearl of great price, great value, he went and sold all that he had, and he bought it. Of course, we might spend Bible classes discussing the ethics of buying a $4 picture frame and selling it for $2 million. We might discuss whether we ought to share the wealth, go back to the person and say, look, we got this here, I'll give you the million. Or 500,000, with maybe 100,000, I don't know. We might discuss that. Of course, then that's a reasonable discussion to have, but the examples the Bible gives, it's not like that you have cheated somebody out of something, because the Bible's talking about spiritual things. It's talking about our eternal soul, and one person finding the gospel, one person finding the kingdom of God, one person saving their soul is not somebody else losing the gospel or losing the kingdom or losing their soul. How much more valuable those things are. We appreciate the dollar values of things, but do we appreciate things whose value cannot be measured in dollars and must be measured in other ways? We see sometimes people who are frittering their time away, time that they can never get back. I don't know. I just don't understand. 6-hour marathon session of Destiny at night on their video games. That's like amazing to me. I had a college professor once who challenged the students and said, while you're in college, you got more important things to do than to go to the movies. I dare you, I challenge you to do 4 years with no movies and no TV so you can focus on your education. But, of course, people just mocked him for that. How in the world could you possibly do that? We recognize sometimes the value of time, which we can never get back. And we might even understand sometimes and look with sorrow at a man who focuses all of his time on his career while his children are young. And, we know one of these days he's going to regret that. You're going to regret more in the future the time that you didn't spend on relationships than the time that you didn't spend on career. We understand something about that. Do we really understand the value of the soul? Jesus says, what would a man give in exchange for his soul? Of course, everybody's got one. You know, there are like 7 billion souls in the world right now. You know, if there's like 7 billion Mercedes-Benz, they wouldn't be worth probably 7 billion Mercedes-Benz. They wouldn't be worth as much probably. But a soul, that's a different matter altogether. Everybody has one soul and only one life with which to secure that soul. And we ought to spend that life on what's most important. It is amazing when you're young. You look toward the future and it's like, I think this is a line from a song somewhere, like a long, dusty Georgia road in the summer. You get out of school and you're 10 years old and it's summertime and you go out and it's just like, it's endless. It'll never end. School will never come back. You'll never be 30. You'll never be 50. You'll never be 70. But it goes by pretty quickly. And time is something we have so very little of to spend on what is really, really important. But we only have one soul, one life in which to secure that soul. And the soul is the most valuable thing that we have. The soul is the life of the body. We understand about health. People spend a whole lot of effort trying to keep their body healthy. We can admire those people who eat their 16 servings of vegetable and run their 5 miles every day and refrain from eating desserts or sugary drinks. But what about the soul? The soul is the life of the body. In Genesis 35 and verse 18, we read about woman there whose soul was departing from her as she died. The soul goes on. The body is only temporary. The soul is not just the life of the body. It is the seat of the most important things that we have, our emotions and our thoughts. In Matthew chapter 22, as a repetition from those commands over and over and over in the Old Testament, Matthew 22 and verse 37, they asked Jesus, what's the most important commandment? And he said, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and your mind and your soul. And I'm not sure he's trying to make a distinction between those things, heart and mind and soul, the seat of our emotions, the seat of our thoughts, the seat of our affections. That's who we are, really, isn't it? It is our life, our physical life, but it is our person. It is our who we are, the soul. And the soul is eternal, in contrast to the fleeting nature of life. That passage in James that Barrett read for us a moment ago, what is your life? It's just a mist, a vapor that's here for a little while. And then it disappears. And, we unfortunately see the demonstration of that over and over again. You know, there are so many people who have lived and their life was important. And they've died and they've been forgotten. Life comes and it goes. But the soul is eternal. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16, the Apostle Paul gets the sense in some ways about the important things that are long-lasting, eternal, versus the temporary nature of the things of this life. 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 16. Therefore, we do not lose heart, he says, though our outer man is decaying, yet our inner man, that's the soul, is being renewed day by day, for momentary light affliction is producing for us an eternal weight of glory far beyond all comparison. While we look not at the things which are seen, but at the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. That's exactly what Jesus was asking when he said, you know, are you willing to carry your cross? Are you willing to lose your life for my sake? Because losing your life for my sake, you'll gain it. The Apostle Paul says, I'll carry a cross. And then he talks about it and he says, just temporary, momentary light affliction in comparison to the eternal weight of glory that we're looking forward to. There's something significant and poignant when we see Jesus on the cross. And then we see those two thieves beside him on the cross. And they're dying. Their life is coming to an end. However long, however brief it has been in their estimation of it, it is over. Just moments left. And then Jesus says to the one thief who confesses his faith in him, today you will be with me in paradise. That's got to have some kind of significance to us. Today you will be with me in paradise. And of course, eternity is at stake in that case. In comparison to the fleetingness of life, in comparison to the kind of thing that Jesus said you shouldn't be concerned about, put your wealth in a box and lock it up, and the moths get it, the rust corrupts it, it just disappears. It's just not going to last. No matter how serious we are about it, it is not that valuable. The soul, on the other hand, now that's valuable. And yet the soul, too, is in danger. There are things that attack the soul that are likely to destroy the soul, or at least to corrupt the soul so that it is not going to have the kind of blessedness through eternity that God ensures that it will. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11. Peter, in reaching somewhat toward the end of his life, I think, he's talking to those people who are going to be left behind. And he says in 1 Peter 2 and verse 11, beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lust, which wage war against the soul. These things that we call sin, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, they corrupt the soul. And worse than that, there's Satan behind it. Satan, who goes about as a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour, as Peter said in 1 Peter 5 and verse 8. Now here's something. Satan knows the value of a soul. Satan knows the value of your soul. You may not, but Satan does. You know, that's why there's so many of these folk tales about a man who's willing to sell his soul to the devil. I think the first one of those I ever read was The Devil and Daniel Webster, in which somehow Daniel Webster, as a lawyer, is clever enough to save this man from the deal that he's made with the devil. It doesn't work that way, usually. In fact, more likely is the case of the older story, the much older story of Faust, who sells his soul to the devil. And for what? Just think about that. In the moment, whatever it seems to be, whether you're selling it for magic, or you're selling it for getting into office, or you're selling it for ability to pay off your mortgage on your farm, in the long term, you know that's just not a really good deal. But Satan knows. Now, I don't know why Satan wants our souls, other than the fact that he's our adversary and he wants us to do harm, and he knows the most harmful thing he can do for us is to cause our souls to be condemned for eternity. To cause us to lose our souls is the greatest harm he can do to us, and that's what he wants to do. He knows the value of a soul, and God knows the value of a soul, too. God certainly understands the value of a soul. That's kind of what's implied, isn't it, in 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9? 2 Peter 3 and verse 9, Peter starts out that passage by saying in the last days, mockers are going to come. Mockers are going to come, and they says, where's the promise of Jesus coming? They're going to mock the whole concept of religion. They're going to mock the whole concept of God. There is no God. I don't see God. Where is he? And then the Holy Spirit explains that in 2 Peter 3 and verse 9. The Lord's not slow about his promises, as some count slowness, but is patient toward you, not wishing that any should perish, but all to come to repentance. Here's how much God values the soul, that he is willing to risk people doubting his promises, willing to risk people doubting his existence. If it's possible, in his patience, he wins one more soul, saves one more soul. He knows how valuable that is. And Jesus knows the value of the soul, too. Matthew chapter 5, Sermon on the Mount, that's really kind of what the whole point of that is about talking about the kingdom, is preserving and saving the soul. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 28, I say this to anyone who looks at a woman with lust for her, has already committed adultery with her in his heart. And if your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you, for it's better to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off, throw it from you, for it's better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. And then he goes on to talk about not swearing falsely. And in between comments about adultery and comments about swearing falsely, no matter how attractive those alternatives might be, no matter how tempting those alternatives might be, no matter what we may think about our situation here in this life, he is saying, it's not worth it. It is not worth it for eternity. Jesus not only tells us how valuable the soul is and makes that point to us, Jesus demonstrates it for us. Because you know how valuable the soul is? By what he was willing to pay for it. In 1 Peter chapter 1, Peter reminds us about the value of the soul and about Jesus' valuation of it. In 1 Peter 1 and verse 18, knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things like silver or gold from your futile way of life inherited from your forefathers, but with the precious blood of a lamb, unblemished and spotless, the blood of Jesus Christ. You know, we think every Sunday morning about Jesus' suffering as we partake of the Lord's Supper. And, of course, that's something to focus on just in and of itself, the fact that he suffered. But why? Why did he feel compelled to suffer on the cross? As Paul talks about in Philippians chapter 4, it's not just a matter of suffering on the cross. He left heaven. He gave up everything that heaven held for him. And he came and took on the form of a human being, the form of a servant, the form of dust that is going to suffer deprivation and pain and even death. And he suffers all of that for what? Well, for a real reason. It's not some foolish sentimentality that he just wants to know what it's like to be a human being for a while. It's because he knows the value of a human soul, and he was willing to give his life for it and to suffer for it, to give up heaven for it temporarily so that we might have heaven in the hereafter. So then that's the question that Jesus is asking. What would a man give in exchange for his soul? You got the most valuable thing in the world. What are you going to trade it for? What kind of deal can you make for it? You know, if in fact we knew that we had a golden Pikachu, or we had a copy of the Declaration of Independence, we'd probably try and get some kind of expert advice about what we're supposed to do with that, how much we can get for it. But you just think about the soul and how trivially people treat that to be. Luke chapter 12, Jesus gives a story, maybe a true story, maybe a parable, but certainly the truth is contained in it, of the rich fool. In Luke chapter 12 and verse 15, he says to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." And he told them a parable, and he said, "The land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself and saying, 'What shall I do since I have no place to store my crops?' And then he said, 'This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods, and I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared?' So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God. And he said this to his disciples, 'For this reason I say to you, do not worry about your life as to what you will eat, nor your body as to what you will put on, for life is more than food, and the body more than clothing.' You fool, And he was doing exactly what so many people would have approved of him doing. He had planned carefully. Maybe he even had worked hard. Maybe he even made sacrifices so that he could make his farm profitable. And in those days, of course, that's the source of wealth. And he had built barns and he'd stored it up and he'd been prudent. And now he has even more profit. And now he says, I'll tear down these barns and build bigger barns. I'm doing great. And then God calls him a fool because he hadn't paid attention to really the most important thing. What will we not give for the things that are most important to us? You know, one of the interesting stories in the Bible is that of Jacob in Genesis chapter 29. Jacob in chapter 29 of the book of Genesis. Jacob loved Rachel. So he said to Laban, I will serve you 7 years for your younger daughter Rachel. And Rachel and Laban said, it's better I give her to you than to give her to another man, so stay here with me. So Jacob served 7 years for Rachel, and they seemed to him but a few days because of his love for her. Yeah. And Proverbs 30 tells us about how worthy a woman is. And a man who finds a wife finds a good thing. And here we have a demonstration of this. A man saw a woman, and he loved her, and he loved her enough he was willing to work 7 years for her, and he never resented that exchange. Over all of those days and weeks, for 7 years, he worked, and they seemed as but a moment to him, because each day that passed brought him closer to his beloved. We live in a world, I think, that values romance or something akin to romance anyway, and thus understand something about Jacob and the exchange that he made for, and even if there are probably very few people in this world who would actually do that, we kind of appreciate that somebody knows what is most valuable and is willing to make a sacrifice. But no matter how worthy a wife may be, no matter how great a blessing she may be, or a husband, our soul's eternal destiny is worth even more than that. And what will we give up for our souls? How much would we give up? Will we give up the lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh and the pride of life? Surely it's worth whatever kind of sacrifice we can make about that. And on the other hand, we marvel at those who trade what is valuable for what is just tawdry, and it just doesn't even compare. We're amazed at the kind of poor trade people make with their time as they fritter it away, or they give up their relationships and their family. For what? For how little? The prodigal son looks at his family and his father and the blessings of his father's household, and he says, that's worth nothing. And he goes off into the far country. Fortunately, he came to his senses and he came back. You think about how frequently that occurs. Amazing, incredible. Men like David Petraeus losing his reputation and his family for a cheap affair. Rich farmer who loses his soul for a barn full of grain. Are you kidding me? Judas, who sold Jesus for 30 pieces of silver. Don't you really understand what is valuable? And on the other hand, we appreciate those, do we not, who make a sacrifice for what they think is valuable. Jacob, who's willing to work 7 years for Rachel. Those people who are health nuts, who are willing to make daily sacrifices over and over and over again in order to have good health. Or we think about those who make the serious kind of commitment to do what they think is the right thing to do. Those soldiers who honor the tomb of the unknowns. Just 700 people in the history of our country have passed the rigorous test, have gone through the discipline to be qualified to walk that 21 steps back and forth before those tombs. Through all kinds of weather, whether it's hot, whether it's raining, whether it's sleeting, they take those steps, and they're willing to do that. And it's like people come from all over the country just so they can marvel at that. And some of them probably mock at it too, but they come to see that. It's like, we got to be impressed, people who are willing to make that kind of sacrifice. The people who make the kind of sacrifices necessary to perform sports at the highest level, we admire that. We admire the founding fathers who, when they signed the Declaration of the Independence, they made the pledge of their lives and their fortune and their sacred honor. And many of them lost their lives and many of them lost their fortune because they were willing to stand up for that independence. We are amazed at those people who can make those kinds of sacrifices. They see what they think is valuable and they will sacrifice anything and everything for it. We understand sacrifice like that in so many areas, but do we understand the value of the soul? Well, Jesus called those people to him, and he said, if you wish to follow me, you got to take up your cross. If you want to save your life, then you have to lose it for my sake, for the gospel's sake. And he asked them, what does it profit a man if you gain the whole world, and you lose your soul? That's a bad exchange. And then I think, you know, with sadness in his voice, as he looks into the future at how many bad exchanges people will make, he said, what a man will give in exchange for his soul. I see this one in the future who's going to give up his soul just for some kind of temporary pleasure. I see this one who's willing to give up his soul just for a little pile of silver and gold. And I see this one over here who's willing to give up his soul just because he wants to get ahead in life. Incredible. There are people who make the sacrifice, who are willing because they understand the value of soul. You think about Paul. He gave up a brilliant career to be a bondservant of Jesus Christ. And I think every time you read in one of his epistles where he says, Paul, a servant, a bondservant, a slave of Jesus Christ, that he is reaffirming to himself that he made the right choice. And can't you hear his peers on the council discussing him when he has come back from Damascus, that road to Damascus where he saw Jesus and was converted? Can't you hear them just talking about him? I don't know what kind of madness has seized him. He had a brilliant future in front of him. He was an up-and-comer. He could have been one of the great ones of his generation. And of course, in eternity, we know which one we would rather be. And you think about Moses, who is in the roll call of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he'd grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin a season. Considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward, the eternal destiny of his soul. Those people understood what was valuable, and we have to admire them. They saw it, and they were willing to sacrifice whatever was necessary for it. Question is, what about us? Are we prepared to risk everything? To give up everything for our eternal soul? Are we willing to make the kind of trade-off that Paul did, that Moses did? Are we willing every day to make a sacrifice, and yet like Jacob, every day to feel like it was nothing because it's worth it? Well, I tell you this, here's the good news. And this makes me feel bad, maybe make you feel bad too. The good news is we don't have to. Because Jesus did. Jesus carried the cross. Jesus died on the cross. Jesus gave his pure life for me and for you. And what he asks of us is, confess him before men, and he'll confess us before the Father. To be baptized into his death and his burial and his resurrection. We don't even have to die on the cross. We don't even have to die at all. We just are symbolically buried in death with him and raised up to a new life in the remission of sins. And then live every day for him. And really, in many ways, it's like, I don't even, It's like probably the best kind of life you could live anyway, because you're associated with the best kind of people. You have the peace of Christ in your heart. You may miss out on, I don't know, a few promotions. You may miss out on some of the tawdry pleasures of life that some of the pagans of the world are experiencing. But it's nothing compared to the sacrifice Jesus made. And it is nothing compared to eternity with Jesus in heaven with our souls preserved. Isn't that amazing? Absolutely incredible. And Jesus says, what would you give in exchange for your soul? If you're here this morning and you haven't confessed Jesus, you better do that this morning. You may not have an opportunity to do so this evening or next week. You ought to make that confession. You ought to take Him into your heart. You ought to give yourself to Him. Serve Him all of your life, because that's very little to give in exchange for the eternal value of your soul. We encourage you as we stand and sing this song.